Our next speaker is Dr. Leslie Dieroff. She's the director of the USGS National Wildlife Health Center. She's a wildlife veterinarian and conservation biologist who has worked with the U.S. federal agencies for, about 10 years now. In addition, she's worked as a science advisor on the committee staff for the U.S. House of Representatives. In 1998, she was honored by the AVMA with their National Animal Welfare Award. In 2001, she published the CRC Handbook of Marine Mammal Medicine. For those of us who work with marine mammals, it has long been our Bible. Dr. Dieroff.
And a segue into what I'm going to talk about today. When Dr. Cook first called me and asked me if I wanted to speak at One World, One Health about zoonotic diseases on CWD, I said, well, you know, CWD isn't really a zoonotic disease. But then after I started thinking about it a little bit, you'll see where we go with it. So the National Wildlife Health Center's mission is really science and wildlife. We do scientific research related to wildlife disease. We don't directly manage wildlife, but WCS has asked me to speak to the wildlife agency perspective. So I will speak to not only the federal wildlife agency perspective, but the state perspective as well within the United States. Well, there are two reasons why CWD is of concern to wildlife management agencies. The first being, as you've heard, CWD is a disease as yet of many unknowns. We don't really know what the impacts are to deer and elk populations. And secondly, from what Trent said, you can notice that there is a propensity for the disease or transmissible spongiform encephalopathies to move to other species. Well, the other thing about the Midwest and the West and Canada is hunting is a extremely important cultural activity. It really is a heritage. You'll see from some of the photographs of hunters I have in my slideshow. So we once thought CWD was only related to wildlife issues, but now I think you'll see with this show that it's far greater than that with sort of the One World, One Health perspective. So what do we do know about CWD as managers and researchers of wildlife? We know that the disease has been affecting deer and elk for more than 40 years, and that its geographic range has expanded. As Trent noted, these red dots on this map are the wild cervid populations with CWD-positive animals. And then the green are states and provinces in which captive deer and elk have come up positive with the disease. The very interesting thing about CWD is that it started out in this cluster, as Trent noted, in Colorado and Wyoming, but it has since moved to rather disparate areas geographically. A very unique characteristic is that CWD, as scrapie is, are both infectious agents. In other words, the disease can be transmitted from animal to animal. It's a horizontal, what we call a horizontal disease, animal to animal, probably through bodily fluids like urine or feces or blood, that sort of thing. We don't know for sure, though. Saliva is also definitely a possibility. The disease agent, the prion that you've been hearing about, can be spread, apparently, from one animal to another. It can persist in the environment after a diseased animal has shed it, and a clinically healthy animal can pick it up at a later date. But compared to what we do know about CWD, what we don't know is much more vast. We're not sure how transmission occurs. We're not sure how to detect the disease in the wild, in particularly live free-ranging animals. We're not sure what the impacts are going to be on elk and deer populations. And we're not sure what other species might become affected. So as I talk to you about management agency perspective today, I'm going to focus on four subjects primarily. Deer and elk, other wildlife, domestic livestock, and humans. And I'll move through these one by one and try to address them individually. With the commingling of wild populations of deer and elk and domestic animals, livestock in particular, with the history of scrapie and BSE, or mad cow disease, as you've heard, we certainly cannot ignore agriculture. Humans are both consumptive and non-consumptive users of wildlife, deer, elk, and other wildlife. And humans also provide population control for deer and elk and are the primary supporters of wildlife management agencies in the United States, particularly through the purchase of hunting licenses and for the funds that are paid for excise taxes into hunting equipment and supplies. So let me take a closer look at each one of these. Impacts on deer and elk. One of the biggest questions wildlife managers have is, will chronic wasting disease in the end decimate populations of elk and deer? In Colorado and Wyoming, remember that small focus area where this all began in free-ranging herds 40 years ago, so far population impacts have not been detected. However, as Trent alluded to, there are small pockets, site-specific foci within Colorado and Wyoming where the prevalence of chronic wasting disease can exceed 30%. Some computer simulations indicate that long-term population declines are definitely likely. Another set of interesting findings with chronic wasting disease is that this disease is more likely to affect male rather than female deer. Also, mature male deer have the highest incidence of the disease of any cohort. In ecological theory, it doesn't really mean very much because the mature male has already contributed genes to the gene pool. However, mature males are the segment of the deer and elk population that the hunters are known to pursue. And it is the reason why many hunters are out there and buying goods and services associated with hunting. So the loss of the mature male population segment could, although insignificant to wildlife, could definitely be a concern for agencies that manage wildlife. Continuing with a little bit of the deer and elk cervid research that's going on, to truly understand what's happening with CWD, because it's a world of uncertainty, we need significant amounts of research effort, and these are just a few of the ongoing collaborative studies being conducted in the United States and Canada as we speak. With this research, we hope to begin to more fully understand chronic wasting disease, how it's transmitted between deer, between elk, how better to detect it in the wild, particularly in live animals, and ultimately how to better manage populations of deer and elk. One of the most important tools, and we've heard it in the AI section this morning as well, is surveillance. By monitoring for the occurrence of CWD, where it occurs, We can learn how disease moves across the landscape. We can detect changes in prevalence across the landscape in response to management activities. It's kind of that adaptive management subject that came up in the first session of talks today. So surveillance in areas where CWD has not been known to occur is actually what detected the disease in Wisconsin and Illinois in those small wild population segments I showed you in that map. Let's move into other wildlife and potential impacts on them. First, CWD has never been documented to jump from deer or elk to any other species. So why are land managers and wildlife managers concerned about this? Why are we concerned about other wildlife? In recent studies, where CWD-infected brain, I think you heard a little bit of an example of this in Trent's talk, CWD-infected brain material was fed to other species, CWD in laboratory circumstances has been shown to be transmissible and infect moose and ferrets. In the U.S., there have been several outbreaks of transmissible spongiform encephalopathies in farmed mink called transmissible mink encephalopathy. I think you saw that TME is what Trent called it. And these outbreaks are tracked back to common food supplies of mink from downer cows and sheep. These are animals that are sick, that are destroyed, and then fed to the mink farms. He also mentioned Kuru and the four people of New Guinea. Kuru apparently resulted from cannibalism of deceased tribal members, and when the cannibalism ceased, so did Kuru. During the BSE outbreaks in Great Britain, spongiform encephalopathies developed in numerous species in zoos, zoos where diseased cows were fed, and particularly to some predatory cats. What's key in these examples is how the disease-causing agent, how the prion, was eaten either by another member of their own species or a different species, and disease resulted. It may not always directly be the consumer of the tainted food that develops the disease. Remember, I told you that scrapie and CWD are considered infectious. Here's a very interesting little study that happened in the laboratory, which Trent also mentioned. I'll just tell it to you in a little different way. Researchers injected scrapie-infected tissue, brain tissue, into laboratory mice, and that generation of laboratory mice lived out their normal lives and were clinically free of disease, apparently free of disease. However, when those animals were removed and their brain material injected into a second generation of mice, those mice developed the disease. So what we were seeing here is an example of the prion passaging. In other words, the disease becomes more infectious by passing through either a third species or multiple generations of the same species. And that was kind of that slide that Dr. Bollinger showed with the timeline getting shorter and shorter as the disease progressed through generations. So while we haven't documented any impacts on predators or scavengers that consume the carcasses of deer and elk, we have to be concerned as wildlife managers what might happen if the bobcat eats the vole that consumed the diseased deer. Here are just some examples of what I'm talking about. To address the impacts on other wildlife, a number of studies have been ongoing. I talked about laboratory studies. There's been feeding and injection of material in these laboratory studies, infected material. In this interesting study here, these are photographs captured by motion detection at night on deer carcasses, predation on deer carcasses. So we have opossum, red fox, striped skunk, golden eagle, and the white-footed deer mouse. Just from these few photographs, a host of wildlife utilize these carcasses when they die in the wild. In a complementary study, we're also taking a look at carcasses of several species of fur bearers to examine them for CWD, because we realize that you know, this is occurring in the nighttime when we can't see it. How about livestock? You've heard that there are no detected transmissions of CWD to livestock. Other diseases, though, like brucellosis and bovine tuberculosis, have shown to be capable of spilling over into wildlife and vice versa. And because deer, elk, and domestic livestock often share the same space and the same time, the potential for CWD to cross over into domestic livestock is an area of concern for wildlife managers. As with other wildlife species, there's been no documented transmission of CWD to livestock in open-range situations. There has been one study where CWD-positive brain material was injected into the brain of cattle, and in that case, 5 of 13 cows did develop clinical neurological disease. The likelihood of transmission to livestock does seem remote, but it is nothing we can put out of our minds. Remember again that CWD and scrapie are unique. They're unique among the TSEs in that they can be transmitted by direct contact from one animal to another. Humans. Potential impacts on humans. To date, there's no evidence that consumption of CWD-positive deer or elk has resulted in human disease. But in laboratory experiments, and again, Dr. Bollinger alluded to this, in the test tube, there has been this spontaneous conversion to the human disease form of the prion, but a very, very low rate. Another area of concern for wildlife managers and landscape managers is economics. Big game hunting in the United States is a $10 billion a year enterprise, where the majority of the benefits go to rural communities. So there's a great hunting heritage, particularly in the Midwest and the West in the United States. It's a treasured activity. You know, these hunters here are very proud of their activity. It's considered, or has been considered, a very safe activity. But now the chance, however remote, that CWD could cause disease in other species casts a shadow on hunting in these areas. And this is a concern for sure. The cost of CWD. When CWD hit Wisconsin in February of 2002, Congress responded by requiring a national CWD plan be established. The team identified six sections that needed action: communications, information dissemination, diagnostics, disease management, research, and surveillance. The implementation plan to implement this national objective has been estimated over just the first 3 years, if it were entirely done, to cost $108 million. Now, Congress has appropriated some funds for CWD in all these areas. For the Department of Interior, USGS is the research arm for the Department of the Interior. $3.3 million went to CWD in 2003, fiscal year 2003. USDA, $18.2 million. The states, $15.3 million. And federal aid, which is a Fish and Wildlife Service program through hunting and fishing license fees, $2.7 million. Now, this looks like a lot of money, but what a lot of these funds are in here, particularly, are redirected funds. In other words, the states have to take money from another important wildlife research or management project and redirect it toward chronic wasting disease because it's a congressional mandate. So if you want more information on chronic wasting disease, I've put some encyclopedic modules of the scientific information out on the table. There also are some website data access points you could take a look at, handouts. And I conclude by just reminding you that the reason we're all here today for One World, One Health is because without partnerships and collaboration, we are not going to accomplish what we need to for the investigation of chronic wasting disease. The groups represented here are just a tiny fragment of those involved with research on chronic wasting disease and other transmissible spongiform encephalopathies. What my point is we cannot think of CWD simply as a disease of wildlife, a disease of deer and elk. It can't be separated from agricultural health. It can't be separated from human health. The research to date really supports the concept of One World, One Health. Thanks.